Football.
It's the football, 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 and sometimes other sports show. Here's your host, AJ Nicoletti.
What up? FFFSOSS.com. At FFFSOSS. Twitter, Instagram, Twitch.tv/AJNic3. What is good? Big pot on this Tuesday. We're going to talk about the college basketball teams that can win the national championship. So we'll do that in the kickoff. Then we'll talk some college basketball from the weekend. Look forward to some games on Tuesday and Wednesday night. You got a weekend soccer recap, Champions League round of 16 second legs to look forward to, and some golf at the end of the program. Quick shout out to Caitlin Clark, the all-time NCAA leading scorer. Awesome to see her break that record. And yeah, like a lot of things can be true. Like you can say like it's awesome for her to break that record, and also that Pistol Pete didn't have a 3-point line. Like they're both true statements. Like it's okay. So like I don't know. I just hate people trying to knock Caitlin Clark by propping up Pistol Pete, and I hate people knocking Pistol Pete by propping up Caitlin Clark. Like they're both all-time great scorers. Like what are we talking about here? So shout out to Caitlin Clark for breaking that record, all-time NCAA leading scorer, which is really really cool. Across the men's and women's game. And honestly, like, it's going to be very, very hard to break. I think it would be another woman, again, who broke it because they're likely to stay all 4 years, whereas the guys aren't as likely to stay all 4 years, especially if you're, like, that type of a scorer. You're going to go to the NBA at some point. So if anyone breaks it, it'll probably be another woman. But I think this record could stand for a while. I mean, it's an outstanding record. It's a crazy, tremendous amount of points. So shout out Caitlin Clark. Also, rest in peace to Chris Mortensen, the ESPN inside reporter for the NFL. Very, very sad. A guy that you learned a lot of stories from, especially if you grew up like me in the 90s. Like, yeah, obviously everyone knows Schefter today and Ian Rappaport, but before those guys, there was Mort. So very sad to learn of his passing. So just those two notes at the top of the show, and then we'll do our college basketball teams that can win the national championship. In the kickoff, I got a list, and I'll give you the reasons why I think these teams can win it. And then I got also some of the teams that I left off the list, and I'll explain why I did leave them off. So we'll do that. Some college basketball talk about games over the weekend and games to look forward to this week. Weekend soccer recap, Champions League, round of 16 second legs, and some golf. All right, kick it off. College basketball teams that can win the national championship. And we could see back-to-back. UConn going for back-to-back. Hurley has the most complete. They had the most complete team last year, and they got better. And I understand they lost some guys, but the additions and the development of some of this roster has been unbelievable. And Newton is a special, special guard, and he's also leading the team in rebounds, which is insane. You have him, Spencer, the shooter, and you don't lose a ton of him with him on defense. Caravan. Klingon, the big, is unbelievable. Castle is an excellent, ball handler scorer. Diarra is another ball handler scorer. Johnson can fill it up when they need to. So, like, they have players. They have the puzzle pieces again, and we could see back-to-back for the first time in a while because this UConn team with Hurley at the helm with all the confidence in the world coming off the title last year, they could absolutely win it again. That team is the most complete team in the country. And I know, you know, I do like an Arizona and a Purdue and a Houston and even Kansas, some of these other teams. Absolutely. I think they're some outstanding teams and some really, really great teams. And this year is pretty wide open, but don't be surprised if we are talking about back-to-back champs come April with the UConn Huskies, because this team is that good. This program is that good, and they are back to what they're about, which is winning basketball, winning conferences, and winning titles. And UConn certainly could do that. Now, Purdue is a team that has coming off these horrific back-to-back early exit in the tournaments. And Matt Painter has to have his team ready to go, because to me, this is the best version of this Purdue, you know, because we've talked about, you know, some teams with EDs had better players. Fine. EDs the best he's been. And the three guards, Smith, Lawyer, and Jones, have gotten so much better last year to this year. It is a insane difference in the skill level, the attitude, the physicality of these Purdue guards from last year to this year. Lawyer really was only a shooter. Now he can play a little defense and handle the ball. Jones has really wowed me in a lot of possessions where Purdue has needed a bucket, and Edie's been the post entry has been, you know, taken away, and Smith reverses it, and Lawyer turns down a shot, and the ball goes to Jones, and he makes something happen. And between Gillis and Kaufman Wren, they can both play the five when Edie's like needs a break, and they're very solid at the four. So you have the three guards, you have the two kind of fours, and then you have Edie, who for my money is the best player in the country. And yes, he's that big, but he's also very fundamental. He's very technical. His basketball IQ has grown, you know, game in and game out. It seems like he's only like he doesn't make mistakes that he used to. You know, when he would bring the ball down to the floor, you're like, what are you doing, dude? He doesn't do that. When's the last time Zach Edey brought the ball down to his, like, chest? It's almost always above his shoulders when he's in the post, or offensive rebounds, all that kind of stuff. He is so dynamic. Purdue is so dynamic. And, yes, I understand they have this stink on them in the tournament of these previous, you know, horrendous early exits. Listen, for me, this Purdue team is really good. I know they've had some losses in the league, but the non-conference wins, Gonzaga, Tennessee, Marquette, Bama, Arizona. Purdue, Bama could be a title game. It could be a Final Four game. It could be Elite Eight game. Purdue, Arizona could be a final game. Purdue, Tennessee could be an Elite Eight Final Four game. Purdue, Marquette could be Elite Eight Final Four. Like, those matchups are going to help them, you know, come this time of the year. So Purdue, number two on my list. Houston's number three with Coach Sampson. The defense and guards that could score. Cryer, the transfer winner. Shed and Sharp. Sharp has just wowed me when I've watched Houston. Because you know Shed and you knew Cryer. They're both players. But Sharp really just improves almost possession to possession, it feels like. Like truly, like just getting better and better and better. And then they have a lot of players, but Roberts in the front court, that big presence in the paint. If they defend, they can beat anybody. And also, they have the scorers that if they're not defending well, they can score with you too. So Houston can win a bunch of ways, has a good coach, and is this a year they finally break through? For me, it absolutely could be because they did play, you know, not the best non-league, but a good non-league. And then they walk into the Big 12, and that's the best league in the country. So night in and night out, especially on the road, besides maybe two or three places this year in the Big 12, you are getting battle-tested. And that Houston team, for me, just got better and better and better as the season's gone on. Now, Arizona with Coach Lloyd, they're the best team out west, and they deserve some respect for the non-league games. Now, I know the Pac-12 is down. It's not like it was in football when football was very impressive this year. In basketball, it's not doing well. USC is not where they thought they would be. UCLA is not where they thought they would be. Wazoo is at a nice season and should get into the tournament. And you know, a lot of people are saying 5 seed, and I can see them losing to a 12 very easily because I understand they got up for the two games against Arizona, but what else have you done for me? I don't know. But Arizona wins versus Duke, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Bama, losses to Purdue and FAU. They played big opponents early in the season. And Caleb Love's come in and been outstanding. He is a sensational guard, okay? You pair him with Boswell, who can handle the ball in a spot and also make some big shots. Larson, Johnson, Ballo, that five is really, really talented. And they play well together. They fit. And everybody can kind of handle the ball. Everybody can pass out of the post when you post them up down there because Larson can get down there. Boswell likes to play with his baskets, his back to the basket, and Caleb Love can do anything. So for me, this Arizona team is really, really good, and I don't think they've had the respect that the rest of the country should give them. Now, is that a little of the conference is doing and also it being out west? Absolutely. That's just what happens in the Pac-12 year in and year out unless they have, like, just absolutely loaded and you have to watch them. A lot of these people don't stay up, guys. Like, I'm staying up to watch the Pac-12. Like, I love college basketball. You know I love college basketball. And the Pac-12 is done after this year. It's very sad. It's not good what's happening across college sports landscape, but that Arizona team is very good, and they should be getting some more respect. Kansas, Coach Self. For me, they have a great four. Dickinson coming in. Outstanding big. Wish he could make some more free throws consistently. We'll see how that plays out the rest of the way. But McCullough and Adams can get you a bucket in so many ways, and Harris is such a, like, throwback point guard. You know, he's not a Kyrie. He's not a scorer point guard guy. He's, like, almost like a Tony Parker in the sense of, like, yeah, he'll get some buckets on some runners, and he can knock down some free throw and shots, and, you know, when he gets fouled, he'll knock down his free throws. But, you know, Tony Parker filled up the stat sheet and made everybody else better. You know, I could see this Harris guy doing that game in and game out for Kansas. And, you know, between Fernby, Timberlake, Jackson, they need two of those three guys to step up and be your six every game, because you're going to get games out of Dickinson, McCullough, Adams, and Harris. Those four, you know, even if they're not shooting it great, they're going to continue to play defense and rebound the basketball and do those little things for Self. Those four, can they get two of those other three to step up between Ferpy and Timberlake? Can one of those guys shoot it consistently? Can both of them shoot it consistently from beyond the arc, right? And then Jackson helping out as a big body as well. Carolina with Hubert Davis. Veterans that can ball. Davis, Baycott, Ryan the transfer, Ingram comes in. Like, they have players, Carolina. Davis can go for 40-plus, you know, at a drop of a hat if he really wants to. He's that great of a scorer. Baycott is just a matchup nightmare and also commands the paint on defense. UNC is very, very good. UNC is very, very good. And I think a lot of it will come down to their draw and if Baycott can stay out of foul trouble and if Davis can continue to score like he can. Because Carolina is as talented as pretty much every team across the land because of the way they recruit and the way they bring in and just the talent base that they have to choose from. So if they get in a sprint with a team and go up and down and it's a game in the 80s, they could always steal that game because they could always outscore you. That's just Carolina. Now, if a team bodies them up and frustrates Davis and Baycott gets into foul trouble, that could be a UNC early exit, right? But they could still win the whole thing because they are that talented. Kentucky, another team that can score. With Coach Cal, they can score the basketball. The defense is questionable, but when the effort is there on that side of the floor, that Kentucky team can win this national championship. Now, similar to Carolina, most of the time, most nights, they're going to need to outscore you. You know, we've seen this Kentucky team put up triple figures six times this year. That's amazing. That's insane. Are you kidding me? Six times they've scored 100 points in a 40-minute game? Think about that. And with Reeves, Dillingham, Shepard, scorers, Mitchell, Wagner, Edwards, Terrio, the big guy, Big Z, this Kentucky team is so talented. And I know it's year after year we talk about Kentucky being talented and Cal rolls the ball out and figures out. No, give Cal some credit. Because when he gets that team to defend, they can play with anybody. And they can play with anybody anyway because they can outscore anyone. But if they can play defense, you could absolutely see that team in the Final Four. Absolutely see that team in the Final Four. Same conference, Alabama, Coach Nate Oates. Same story as Kentucky. I think Kentucky can defend better. And Bama will have to outscore teams every game. But with Sears, Estrada, Nelson, Griffin, these guys can fill it up. And they really believe that let's just fire it up there. Keep shooting. Because they're going to go in at some point. We trust our skill set, our system so much. Just keep filling it up. Just keep shooting it. They're going to go in eventually. And that's what they try to do with Alabama. And they're another team that if they're hitting your threes, if they're hitting their threes, good luck keeping up. Because you better score and then work on some defensive adjustments, whether that's switching or changing their screen protection, all that kind of stuff. Like your shade, your hedging and all that kind of stuff. So Bama, Kentucky, very similar. We've seen Kentucky turn up the defensive effort a couple times this year. Can Alabama match it? I don't know. Can Alabama match it? I don't know. Marquette, the second choice out of the Big East with Shaka Smart. Kolick, for me, is a big, big part of why I think Marquette could win it all, because he's a guy that just can take over a game and will score and will play defense and will make his teammates better when he's not scoring. And he is just a gamer that Shaka just look at and be like, we're riding you. Every play calls for you down the stretch, you know? And he does have some help with Jones, Igadario, Joplin. And with Kolick and Igadario missing against Creighton, they still played pretty hard and came close to possibly pulling that out with just really Jones going crazy. So Marquette, for me, Shaka is an excellent coach. We know he's had a ton of success in March. Can he get the big one? We'll see. We will see. Baylor, the last team here with Coach Drew. Four guards, Walter, Dennis, Love, Nunn. They got the bigs in Bridges and Yves Massey, the big. This Baylor team is really good. One of the only teams in the country, six guys in double figures. And, you know, Bama and Kentucky can score, but it's, I don't think it's, how do I say this? There's more guys that can score on those teams, whereas this Baylor team, these six guys are going to fill it up and try to stop it and try to figure it out. That Baylor team is very, very good. And they're waiting to get out of the Big 12 because they're getting tired of getting picked off and getting a lot of teams' best efforts because they want to play somebody else in that conference. All right, why I left some teams off. Tennessee. You know I don't like Barnes. It's not exactly the same team it's been, but it's pretty much the same core. Yes, they bring in Kinect, who's been excellent and probably is SEC Player of the Year if you look at that conference and how it's played out. But it's a Barnes team, and I'll never trust him in March until they win it in my face, kind of like Tony Bennett in UVA did. So they're on the list, you know, a Tennessee team that I'm never going to believe can do it until they do it. And until they do it, I'm right. And if they do beat me, I tip my hat, I don't move the goalpost, and I say I was wrong, like I did with UVA. I said I was wrong. They won it. So Tennessee, yes, Kinect has given them another dynamic, but Vescovi, Ziegler, you know, the rest of that core, I don't trust them at all with Barnes in a big spot. Iowa State, for me, is living off a win versus Houston and a solid league record. They played a very light out of conference, and then when they were, you know, quote-unquote tested in the non-league, they lost to A&M, they lost to Virginia Tech, and for a team that some people are like, hey, you know, if they have a good finish of the season, you know, they could be a one seed. They're 10th in KenPom and 8th in the net. Like, you would think they would be 4 or 5 the way some people are talking about them. And I'm not trying to crush them because I've watched them a little bit and they have a pretty good team. But I think they're really living off that win against Houston. And they should be. It's a great win. But could you see a hot 10 or a hot 7 knocking off a 2? I could on that Saturday or Sunday. Duke, for me, it doesn't feel like a Duke Natty team. And I know you could be like, Asia, but you're like Duke. Listen, yes, when I was younger, it was Duke. Jay Williams, Duhon, all those guys. Even into college, yes, because I would go to the Duke games with Moose. He needed somebody to go with. I loved going to the Garden. Everybody knows that. So I root for the Duke Blue Devils, of course. And I still root for the Duke Blue Devils, especially when they play Carolina. But I'm much more of a fan of the sport overall than just one team. So I'm not trying to be like, oh, biased or hater or whatever, because that's not fair. But this just doesn't feel like a Duke Natty team to me. And I could be wrong, and they could be a 2 seed, but the path is going to be much tougher than it traditionally is for a top Duke team. And even for some top Duke teams where they don't have the hardest path of a 1, have they always gotten there? No, not always. So, to me, this is a very good Duke team. Would I be shocked if they were in the Final Four? Yeah, I would be. I think this is a Sweet 16 Elite 8 exit for a Duke team. Unfortunately for them. Auburn, I like Pearl. Some of the, they got some players on that team. But they're absolutely terrible against Quad 1. They haven't been great in the league against some big opponents when they've had to step up. And you can beat and bury all the Quad 3 and Quad 4 teams you want. But when you don't play well against Quad 1s and you want to talk to me about winning a national championship, I'm gonna disregard you. I'm sorry. I have to do it. You can't have that record against Quad 1 and expect me to believe you can win a national championship. You can't do that. I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you. Creighton, the third choice out of the Big East. That's tough to get a good draw. You know, are they a 3, a 4? You know, that's not easy to win as a 3 or a 4. It's very rare. We don't see it often. Sure, you get an 8 seed to a Final Four if they get a great run and they end up beating the 1. But it's very rare. It doesn't happen every year. So Creighton would have to benefit from a really good draw, which I don't expect them to get as the third choice coming out of the Big East. I just don't see them getting a good draw. And then the two teams that, for me, are so freaking talented and I just do not understand them, Michigan State and Texas. Both have the talent to win a national championship. Both should have the wherewithal. Obviously, Izzo with Michigan State has the coaching. I think Terry's a good coach. I'm not sure. I think he's a good coach. But Texas and Michigan State, I have to talk about them because they're so talented and I just don't understand why they're not in this conversation. So I'm going to put them in the conversation, even though I doubt that they'll even, you know, be in the second weekend. All right. So those are the teams that I think you win. UConn, Purdue, Houston, Arizona, Kansas, Carolina, Kentucky, Bama, Marquette, Baylor. 10 teams. I thought maybe a couple of weeks ago it was around 15-ish. I cut some teams out. I cut Duke out. That was a tough cut. That was probably the toughest cut because you know I'm not going to take Tennessee ever, and you know I'm probably not going to take Iowa State. So Duke was definitely the toughest cut to get from 11 to 10. And Texas and Michigan State just will never make any sense to me this year. I wish I could do a case study about those two teams. But they don't make any sense. All right, let's go to some weekend results. Nova continues their big run towards the tournament and getting in as an at-large. They beat Providence in the dunk, a big road win for the Nova Wildcats. South Carolina knocked off Florida in a ranked versus ranked matchup at home. Big matchup in the SEC. That'll help for seeding in the conference tournament and also, I'm sure, seeding for the NCAA tournament. Baylor with a big win over Kansas. Kansas struggling on the road in the league. Yes, you know where the tournament is played. So they'll have their home fans and everybody will be excited, right? But NCAA tournament games, a lot of the times those feel like road games. So you gotta feel Kansas has to be better than that, but good win by Baylor. Give Baylor credit there. Illinois, Wisconsin. Wisconsin free fall continues. I mean, you talk about a team that had a really, really good start to the season, scoring, playing relatively some defense. Not the best defense they've ever played, right? But scoring, and now they have slowed down. Illinois beats them at the Kohl Center. That's a big win for Illinois. Arizona knocks off Oregon. Oregon, down year. Not a good year. Marquette, Creighton. Creighton wins. No Kolek, no Godario for Marquette. Still hung around, played tough. Give them credit. And Creighton's a good team. That's a good three in the Big East there. Auburn beats Mississippi State. You got Duke knocked off UVA. Purdue beat Michigan State. Michigan State hung around and made a charge, but then Purdue pulled away late. You had Tennessee against Bama. Tennessee, very good second half from the Volunteers on the road. Give them credit. Came from behind. Bama, not a great second half. Just not a great second half at home. You blow that game. Gonzaga holds off St. Mary's in the second half. And then UConn on Sunday blows out Seton Hall, gets some vengeance for one of their losses earlier in the campaign. All right, some games early this week. You got Purdue, Illinois in a showdown in the Big Ten. Gigantic contest in Champaign. You got Bama, Florida. Bama trying to right the ship after that loss to Tennessee. They go down to Gainesville. You got Sunflower Showdown, Kansas State and Kansas. Kansas trying to pick off Kansas State after they lost in Manhattan earlier in the season. Tennessee and South Carolina. Can South Carolina follow up that Florida win with another big win at home in the league against a ranked opponent? Northwestern travels to East Lansing to take on Michigan State. And here's a game that is going to determine seeding in the league and possibly a, you know, data point for a for a spot in the tournament. BYU, Iowa State. BYU has been picking some teams off on the road in the Big 12. Give them some credit. And then in the Big East, UConn, Marquette. Big game in Wisconsin. UConn traveling up there. One of the big calendar dates in the Big East when UConn and Marquette play in this new iteration. All right, weekend soccer recap. EPL at the City Ground. Forest 0, Liverpool 1. A Darwin Nunez stoppage time winner gives the points to Liverpool. The latest goal scored by Liverpool in the Premier League ever. And I'm seeing a lot of people complain about a drop ball situation. Well, if you watch the whole game, Harvey Elliott slammed it off somebody on Forrest's head after a shot attempt. They stopped the game and Forrest had the ball when Liverpool clearly had the ball. So that's just how Tierney officiated it. Don't complain about it. Like, it's not like there was a goal that was onside and they ruled it onside, but they didn't tell the ref that it was onside. It's not even close to the same. So stop that. Stop that right now. Let's just say that, okay? But give Liverpool credit. Found a way to win the game. McAllister, a great assist. Endo won the ball back. And, you know, continually in that play, all Forrest has to do at the City Ground is get past Endo, and they probably have a break to win the game themselves. But they don't. They turn it over, and then they complain. And they also had some time waste, booked for time wasting in the stoppage time. So that adds 30 seconds if you don't know anything. So, all right. So you had Liverpool win away from Anfield. Big one on Saturday morning in the States here. Tottenham, Crystal Palace. Tottenham went a 3-1. It was a free kick that got Crystal Palace off to a great start. But then a Werner goal from a Johnson cutback, a Romero goal from a second wave of a set piece, if I'm not mistaken, and Hummingstone got Tottenham's third to seal it. Newcastle Wolves. Newcastle went at 3-0. Isak off a deflection. Gordon off a kind of scramble in the box. And then Livramento, one of the weirder goals you'll see where he's kind of falling down and still kicks the ball and gets contact. So 3-0, Newcastle beat Wolves. Same scoreline at Craven Cottage. Fulham 3, Brighton 0. Harry Wilson, big goal to start. Then he had an assist to Munoz. And then later in the match, Descartes Overeed set up Traore for Fulham's third. Everton, West Ham. West Ham went a 3-1. Everton actually went up 1-0 even after Beto missed a penalty. It was a Beto header that gave them the lead, but then a Ward-Prowse free kick to a Zuma header, and then late in the match, a Suchek stoppage time winner, and then Alvarez for insurance, 3-1 West Ham. Brentford 2, Chelsea 2 in a London derby. Nico Jackson got the scoring starter for Chelsea. Rosalev level it for Brentford, and then a Wissa bicycle kick gave Brentford a 2-1 lead. Diassi, the equalizing header, split the points between the London clubs. Luton and Villa. Luton win a 3-2, and Ollie Watkins' brace got Villa off to a 2-0 lead. Chong finishes off a netmouth scramble, and then Morris off a set piece made it 2-2, only for the villains to play that role, play the villain. A Luka Digne back post header in the 89th minute, the winner for Aston Villa. Sunday matches, Burnley-Bournemouth. Bournemouth went at 2-0. Kluivert and Semenyo, the goal scorers for Bournemouth. The keeper had a great save as well, give him credit. City and United, Manchester derby at the Etihad, and it's one that will go down for City again, even though United started well, and Onana long ball controlled by Fernandez. He lays it off for Rashford and bangs it past Ederson, 1-0 to United. But then second half, it was the Phil Foden show. Cuts in after beating Lindelof, left foot, brilliant strike. Second goal on the run. He gets it played to him in the box. Great finish to make it 2-1 City. And then Amrabat, I don't know what the hell he's doing, deep in his own end, turns it over. Rodri plays in Haaland. Haaland gets his goal, 3-1 to Manchester City. And then on Monday, Sheffield United hosted Arsenal. Arsenal win it 6-0. Arsenal flying in the new year, scoring goal after goal. Odegaard on a cutback. An own goal made it 2-0. Martinelli, 3. Havertz, Arsenal's 4th. Declan Rice on a cutback, 5. And then Ben White, Arsenal's 6th. La Liga action. Valencia, Real Madrid finishes 2-2. Vinicius had a brace, and Real Madrid thought they had won the match. With the final action of the fixture, a Bellingham header, but the whistle was blown as the cross was coming in. If not, had the cross had been blown, or the whistle had blown right before the cross, which is crazy to even think about blowing the whistle in that spot, but they did it. And Bellingham got a red card after the match, so he'll be suspended for the next one. So scenes in La Liga. I'm not really sure how Real Madrid can complain about it being corrupt when all the other teams say it's corrupt for them. So maybe this is just a ref that's like, I'm not corrupt. Look at me. I just told them to buzz off. They didn't get the chance in time. Like, I don't know. Like, it interests me. It interests me. I'm very confused by how everybody thinks it's rigged for a team. And then that team's also like, it's rigged against us. Well, who's it? So then it's not rigged at all. But, hey, point split there. Atletico beat Real Betis 2-1. Mallorca upset Girona 1-0, and then Athletic Barcelona finished 0-0. I think Pedri got hurt again, which is unfortunate. Serie A, AC Milan beat Lazio 1-0. Lazio had 3 red cards in that match, so that's crazy. Napoli beat Juventus 2-1. Kvaratskhelia got the goal scoring started. Chiesa leveled it for Napoli, and Raspadori the winner for... No, Chiesa leveled it for Juventus. Sorry, Raspadori the winner for Napoli. Inter win it 2-1. A Sanchez penalty was the difference. Bundesliga, Freiburg, Munich. Munich had a 2-1 lead after Tell and Musiala scored, but they conceded an 87th-minute equalizer and all but gave it to Leverkusen. Bochum and Rebel Leipzig went a 4-1. Ulmum, Appenda, and Poulsen, the goal scorers there. Berlin and Dortmund went a 2-0. Adeyemi and Mattsson, the goal scorers for the Yellow Wall. Cologne and Leverkusen 2-0. Frimpong and Grimaldo, the goal scorers for Xabi Alonso. Monaco and PSG finished 0-0 in Ligue 1. Mbappe got subbed off at halftime and then was seen in a suit showered up with his mom watching the game in the stands. Kind of concerning. All right, Champions League, round of 16, second legs. You got Real Sociedad and PSG. PSG leads 2-0 on aggregate, but they are going to Spain, to be fair. Elstondo Odoriziola Fernandez out for Real Sociedad. Baranexa is doubtful. He scored a goal, I believe, earlier in the campaign. PSG, Kempembe, Skinner, Asensio, all out. So the team news there for those sides. You would think PSG having the 2-0 lead, yes, it's all for Real to turn around, but they would need 2 goals to force extra time without conceding. So it'll be a tough ask, even though it is at home. Bayern and Lazio. Lazio 1-0 from the first leg. Bayern have only failed to make the quarterfinals once in the last 12 seasons, the 18-19 campaign. Upamecano is suspended for the host. Koeman and Sar, Peretz also out, and Gnabry and Sané are doubtful. So it'll be a tough pick of an 11-4 title. Lazio, Petric is out, and Ravella is doubtful for Maurizio Sarri. But Bayern only have to turn around a 1-0 defeat. Real Madrid come back to the Bernabeu. They will welcome in Red Bull Leipzig after a 1-0 road away from home victory in the first leg. As we know, Courtois is out for Real along with Militao and Alaba, so a makeshift back line again for Carlo Ancelotti. For Red Bull Leipzig, Simakan, who's a very big prospect along the back lines. A lot of teams are vying for his services soon. And Klosterman also out, so a guy who has scored some goals for Red Bull Leipzig in this competition. And it's all to play for both teams there, even though Leipzig have to turn around. And then you got Man City, Copenhagen City coming home with a 3-1 lead from the first leg away win, and Grealish is out for Man City, but everybody else is available, and you could see Pep, I'm sure, will at least, you know, play some of the guys, but he will pull a lot of guys to get ready for Liverpool at the weekend, and we will talk about that game plenty on Thursday show. Golf, Austin Ekra wins the Cognizant Classic. It finished out on Monday after some wind and rain and some bad conditions in Florida, unfortunately. So Florida swing hasn't gone off to the best start, but it is what it is. Arnold Palmer, invitation next. You had the Seminole pro member today in the golf world, if you're familiar. Seminole National down there in Florida. All the pros play it with the members. It's one of the biggest tournaments in country club, you know, America, I could say. I guess you could call it. But big tournament there. Tiger did not finish well. So that's all right. He's not going to play the Arnold Palmer anyway. He'll get ready for the Players, which is the following week, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I believe so. So Thursday show, we will look back at Champions League round of 16 second legs, as well as some of this college basketball early in this week. Look forward to the big matchup in the Prem, Liverpool-Man City, 1-2 in the table, and a match that could determine how the league champion is crowned. So more on that match on Thursday, along with college basketball, some golf, and the rest of the footy schedule. So everybody, have a great week. I will talk to you on Thursday. Until then, peace.
Sometimes Other Sports Show. That's the name of it? Guys, check out his podcast. That sounds like my kind of podcast. Football, 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 and Sometimes Other Sports Show. Sounds like me.